What is up? My name is Kenny Wu, an online fitness coach to help men in the 20s lose weight, get abs, and first time to mindset, nutrition, and training. That's enough about me. Let's get right into today's day. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to Live to Inspire podcast. Today is Tuesday, so I'm hopping on a Zoom call with my clients. We're talking about equipment. What kind of equipment do you need for weighted dips or wrapping your knees for squats? Like, do I like doing that one? How often should I wear a back belt? How to do supersets? What are the benefits of using lower weights with full reps compared to higher weights with like a quarter wrap or like a three-quarter wrap? I actually like this question. Avoiding eating out and triggering parties. Stacking pre-workout with pump and the differences of pre-workouts. This person really wants to abuse all the pre-workouts, eh? Kidding. But mind-muscle connection cues for legs. So tune in for this one. All right, so the first one, going with equipment, need to do proper weighted dips. In weight belts. So this is a dip belt over here. What this dip belt is basically tops like one of those plates out. They try to go around it, touch the other side, and then it touches your waist, so kind of hang it off of you. Like you do weighted dips over here. Now, with that being said, if you don't have weighted dip belts, you get like Amazon or something online, or you could use the dumbbell method. Well, that one's a little tricky sometimes because with dumbbells, you would have to kind of pretty much put it between your legs and really hold on to that one if you need a little bit uncomfortable. That's, or if you couldn't really say not have either of those choices, do just as many reps as you can to maximum dips. Now, if you're just get similar kind of results, as long as you can push yourself to the failure in dips, after doing like a lot of dips itself, that might be working more the cardiovascular as kind of standpoint though, and more the muscular joints, and not as much of a hypertrophy, so really growing the muscle to that further extent. So it might not be optimal in that way. That would be a part of this in that kind of aspect. All right, for wrapping knees for squats itself, it's going to be, I would say, not really, I never actually ever wrapped my knees. I use not a knee brace. It's one of those knee pad things. So pretty much gives me, based the whole idea of my knee pad things, it warms up my knee joints, so they're a little bit more, almost like loose, not loose in that sense, but a little warm. So the joints and the lubrication around that's more kind of fluid in that sense, because when you're more warm in that sense, more fluid's gonna go there, more blood flow's gonna go there, and you're less likely to have more knee pain. So that's why I use those knee pads. The kind of side of things, but wrapping your knees is kind of the same thing in that aspect. A person never actually tried the wrapping knees, see a lot of people kind of do it. It's, I guess, similar kind of concept. I'd rather just pop them on because wrapping knees takes a long time. And I used to never really use them until I started really getting heavy into weights. And as well as I kind of got older, as well as I started feeling in my joints, like I had to feel more in my knees now to play security the week of volleyball. And yesterday, for example, I did my leg day and volleyball. And when I went to go play volleyball later on, I couldn't barely jump because I hit the legs all that day. And like in the depth taking toll. And I was jumping, I was like, wow, I don't know. Like, before I would jump, well, I did like that feeling of like, oh, okay, well, I don't really want to jump, but like a jump, so it's like a kind of half-ass jump just because I felt the knee kind of pain before I jumped. So yeah, with knee pads kind of over there, where they can be a little cushy over there, it definitely kind of help you out. First, I think knee sleeves, that's what exactly called, not knee pads, knee sleeves. So story short is that if you want to use them, I personally use them for all my squats right now. I never did before them. All right, so how often should I wear the back belt? The base referring to all the weightlifting belts, some kind of people will use for squats or deadlifts. I pretty much say, once you got to get past a certain point for numbers wise, like after like 2.5 plates, so 275 on a deadlift, you consider one itself in 2 plates, it's like nothing. Or like I kind of go by the numbers kind of standpoint, or like a barbell back row, if you're using a plate one more, you can start kind of using one over there. There's not really like a set point where it's like, okay, I have to wear this now, or grab that, but there's no really con to not wearing it either itself. But I mean, a little bit of con, I guess, is maybe the limited ab work itself, but I'd rather use direct kind of ab training. That's, I guess, the controversial kind of opinion. So you could really use it when you're squatting like a plate or something like that, and you're doing direct ab work on site to kind of really mitigate that one. That kind of aspect, but you do have to learn how to use it properly too, as well as how to breathe properly with the back belts or the weight belts. So that is another kind of thing that you definitely have to wear, and that whole bracing thing and how we did you on it. But with that being said, I personally use it when I am But squatting over 2.5 plates, really, like almost the machine squats like that, or like a free weight box squats, and I pull it in there, or like a barbell bezel row, I start pretty much using the plate. And that can add, there's no really con, like I mentioned, too much. I would argue personal result in these lighter weights, but hey, it's kind of up to you on that kind of sense. Now, how to use supersets. Supersets basically very, very kind of simple over there. So basically just back to back, kind of set without rest. So I did like a curl, then do like a tricep extension, back to back on this aspect with a little rest. So right away, I finish my curls, I go straight into the triceps, then like without rest. So that's pretty much superset over there. Or if I did, let's say, what has to be on the program over there? Like if our program is superset, we could do them, we wouldn't do superset without the program. And so that would be my natural groundwork stage, the scene just fly. And I superset that with push-ups, like decline push-ups, doing as many as you can. So if you literally the second you finish off with the machine chest fly, you do the decline push-ups right away without rest. But then after you finish those push-ups, do work as many as you can. That's your team program. You would take the rest time indicated, so like 2 minutes itself. Then you go right back to the machine chest fly itself. Then you do the push-ups for rest, and then you take a break again. So that's what the superset would be like. So basic back-to-back exercises that I'm pulling over there with the rest. And after those two exercises, I should pull supersets by the triceps, then you take your rest on occasion on the plan. So it's very simple in that kind of concepts. And benefits of using lower weights, full reps compared to high weight and quarter reps or three-quarter reps. I would say the full range of motion always wins in the end of the day, right? Just because we get to fully stretch and lengthen that muscle and contract it, that's how you're muscle is going to fully grow in that sense, and also reduce your chance of injury. Because if you're doing, most of the times people injure themselves or because of doing too high of a weight, and you're gonna see that a lot of times with people trying to quarter rep it or to quarter rep yourself like that, not doing the full range of motion. So with that lower weight, using that full range of motion, you have less chance of injury. You will work that muscle to a greater extent itself and lengthen and shorten that muscle, which is basically how muscle contracts and functions. You're actually get that full like muscle working in that extent, and that's going to be a lot better than just doing like half the range of motion. And also a big part of it too as well, it's going to be a way to stretch, right? So one of that way to stretch is you're going to have more mobility in that sense, because when we do workouts, it's often like machine chest fly or like a chest fly, cable chest fly, you're putting yourself through your body in a range of motion that's going to stretch those muscles out. So it's going to help you in your prevention standpoint too as well, because let's just say all you did were half reps. In this case, with higher weights, and your body's being accustomed to a very shorter range of motion. And let's just say maybe in day-to-day life that you had a motion where, I mean, you caught your hand on the door and you're going running through that, and your arms behind your body, now you're probably going to injure yourself or tear a muscle because your body's not used to being in that range of motion. So that's another kind of pro of doing a full rep too as well. That's not really talked about because more people don't really care about that kind of aspects. So I'd say full reps always do win. And sometimes my program begins in, which if it's a half rep or something like that, it would be like a superset. So I might do like full range of motions on lateral raises, standing lateral raises. Then a superset shot was like a half rep itself or partials, right? To really finish off that muscle and really get all the blood flowing over there and really push it to that failure and kind of beyond, right? So that's a training technique that I sometimes kind of use for specific exercises. But in general terms, full reps always win, and that's or a little bit. Now, avoiding eating out and drinking at parties. Obviously, the number one thing for this one to kind of really make sure you have people on track, or kind of avoid those temptations, is setting the rules and you plan for yourself. Right. So, learning by that is, let's just say maybe I have 2 treat meals for a week, or you on the meal plan itself, and say, okay, well, I'm only going to eat out the 2 days a week. If I get to ask, so maybe the third day itself, then I'm not going to go for that one. Maybe the 2 other days itself, you kind of asked out, you're like, okay. And now if you use those 2 days a week that you're like, I got asked already, it's like the third day, it's like, okay, I'm not going to go eat out with my other friend that can ask me out to eat because I already ate out twice, right? And now for me personally, I only go out to eat if my buddy's kind of asked me out to eat. So it's like, I want to go out just on my own to McDonald's or McWendy or something like that. Or, and even on those weeks too as well, that let's say I don't go out to eat with a buddy because he's going to ask me, I just don't go out to eat. I just stick to 500%. On that kind of aspect. So that's like some rules I do kind of set for myself. Now, it's important. The more important part is actually sticking with those rules, right? So planning those rules, sticking to those rules itself, because this mainly applies for drinking. So avoiding drinking parties, you could have a drink or something like that, still make that progress. Let's say maybe you allowed yourself to two mixed drinks for a week in this aspect, like the one at the party. Then stick with that one at the party, right? Create that rule for yourself over there. It's like, okay, now the one drink, social setting, I'm just going to enjoy myself with this one. But then after, you know, if you get gas, then another one, you can kind of have that hard going to give it up, right? So, because the problem with these ones is once you kind of break that rule, a lot of people, like, especially, you know, some clients and just in general kind of human sense, is once you kind of break a rule, it's like all out, right? It's about shit. I have three cheat meals now. I've only had those up two. Well, fuck it. Let's go have another one. Like another one. And turn it like six cheat meals. And you know, it turns into a cheat day or something like that. Or maybe after the two mixed drinks per week that you allowed yourself to there, you had a third one. And, oh, shit. Or fucked up mentally. And, well, I plan to do two. And you kind of, you know, go all out. You're like, fuck it. Well, might as well have all the shots over here. Might as well have this, right? Because you broke that rule for yourself that you initially set. And it's like breaking that trust, right? And this happens quite a bit too, as well, with people who workouts, and they create like, okay, I'm going to make sure I workouts, you know, in the morning before work itself, and then they don't get it done. And then they kind of shit. Okay, I didn't do that over here. It's the next day, then I'm missing it. The next day, then all of a sudden they kind of fall off the whole workout portal over there. So it's basically creating those rules for yourself. And yeah, it's following through with them. So even if, let's just say it was the three cheat meals a week itself, and you allowed yourself at three, well, fuck, five, right? But that, you have to set that rule before you kind of go into that one, right? It's not changing up the rules as you do it. But you had two cheat meals for the week. Okay, I'm going to allow myself three now, right? It's just because, you know, you capped out and somebody asked you, you're not bumping up that rule over there because now you're too lean on that one. And that was an initial rule you kind of set for yourself. So you have to stick to that one. Because it's not always just the things you do, but it's what you set for yourself and how you fall through with that one. Because how you do one thing is how you do everything. So if you keep being linear, so let's say, oh, I missed one workout here because, you know, I got a little tired, so I kind of slept in, right? That's going to transfer over to everything, maybe for your meal plan too as well. It's like, oh, you know, like, I was kind of tired after work itself. Let's go stop at McDonald's, being more lenient over there. So once one thing kind of slips through, you're going to notice that in other areas too as well. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, shit, you're not even following the plan at all, maybe like 10%. And do you jab shit and backtracking habits? That's why you got you. Position we are right now, or not being able to get to that body. So it's how you do one thing, it's how you do everything. And once you create those rules for yourself, you follow through with those rules no matter what. And that's how you will build that small little confidence yourself to be more successful, whereas a weight loss, fat loss itself, muscle gain, or even like business wise, like finance or something like that, right? So it's how you do one thing is how to do everything. And I was on another podcast earlier today itself with some guy I got connected to. He's this multi-millionaire game. That's basically, yeah, just kept talking about the same kind of things. It's why people who are successful in this too as well, I do really well on the business side because of very disciplined aspect. And how you do one thing is hard to do everything. It's because when you kind of, you know, go through with all the things you plan ahead and self, is you become generally more successful in the business realm or something like that, because it requires a lot of discipline to do those extra steps. Maybe it's business or just trying to do other things outside of the home. So I found that very interesting. I actually kind of put the rules on him and ask him in that sense because he was very successful. When I asked him how, because he was very jacked too as well, I was like, okay, well, how do you feel like, you know, fitness going to help in that sample frame? And yeah, I was a lot of seeing variations. I found it cool. So stacking pre-workout versus pump and the differences of pre-workouts, you could definitely stack pre-workout with a pump over there. Just, it's just going to get you better pump, more blood flowing, more pulse itself, honestly. And it doesn't really actually do anything from a performance standpoint. This might feel like you look bigger in the mirror or feel like you got a better workout. But difference between pre-workouts, there's a lot of difference between pre-workouts. It all depends on the ingredients itself. So if you give me like 10 different pre-workouts, they're not going to be the all the same ingredient complexes and everything like that. Some of the base core ingredients I'm actually list them out so you have an idea are going to be caffeine. So that's what's really going to have an energy booster itself and also performance booster. Citrulline malate, which is usually a pump product itself, so it really gets that blood flowing over there. That's what really gets you that pump. So those are top two. And was it beta-alanine? That really helps more endurance. So let's do like past 20 reps. That burning sensation that you normally get through, it helps shuttle the hydrogen ions a little bit faster. So basically what it means is you might be able to put out a few more reps because you can fight through the burn a little better when it burns not as high. So those are top three ingredients over there for pretty much all the pre-workouts. You're also beta-alanine, caffeine, and citrulline malate. So depending on the dosages of each one, because some of them may have like a really good pump one, it'll be like 8 grams of citrulline malate versus another one they have like 2 grams of essentially malate and higher the caffeine, so maybe like 30 milligrams of caffeine. So they all might have some different things to kind of focus on. Now, some other pre-workouts might actually have some nootropics kind of added to as well, like lion's mane or some other small ingredients that might be like more focus-wise. So all depending on the pre-workout ingredients itself, but those are top 3 ingredients, so we'll see. And whatever the kind of market is adding, if you see one that's focused, obviously lion's mane kind of adding over there. Or if you see, I don't know, there's DIM, so that's the value kind of substance. Yeah, those are a lot of popular for the start of land. That's, you won't find it anymore though. So yeah. So the difference of pre-workouts usually are in the dosages and maybe a few little ingredients like lion's mane they might throw in, depending on which direction they want to market as or go as. But I would say the most standard pre-workout that is like the best, which we're looking for is, what kind of look for is like 200 milligrams of caffeine with screw bar there, like 8 grams of essential malate, and 3.2 grams of beta alanine. Those are really kind of higher ends of dosage. Now, if you never use the pre-workouts, I'd definitely do like a half skip of that one right over there. This might be too wired up. So I remember the first time I took pre-workout, it hit me really hard, but I actually took 2 scoops of that C4 pre-workout one time itself, because I was like, you know what? I am feeling really tired today, and that was probably the worst decision in my life in the moment, because I was in class. Well, actually, I did the workout and I had so much energy afterwards. I was in high school. I went to my class and I really just tapped my leg so much over there, and I could not sit still. Like, my hands were all jittery, and I just raised my arms up because I couldn't sit still in the chair. And I asked to use a washroom, and I just had to run down the hallways because there's so much energy to burn it off. So that was my first experience using 2 scoops of pre-workout. And taught me a lesson. All right, so mind-muscle connection cues for legs. Now, one key thing about on-variable mind-muscle connection is basically, okay, I'm going to break it down a little bit further first. Mind-muscle connection, and we go back on this one, is really connecting with a specific muscle you want to work on during an exercise. So if I want to work and build up my chest more on a barbell bench press, I'm really trying to connect and feel my chest the most during that lift. Now, you can also do that same concept with the triceps and the barbell bench press, but if I'm trying to focus on growing my chest, I want to focus on my chest, right? So if I want to, well, you can also do the shoulders a lot too in the barbell bench press, but this is your mind muscle connection for the legs and even talking about. So in any exercise, you could probably feel, even though it's a minor muscle group, because barbell bench press works your shoulders, the chest, and the triceps. But if you really try to connect with the triceps instead of the chest, you could have, well, that's technically mind muscle connection for the triceps thing, right? But basically, it's connected with the specific muscle group that you're intended to do while in exercise. So hopefully it makes sense. But the legs specifically too as well, it's a little bit different though, because I was doing some research too as well. And a lot of people found that just kind of doing those movements kind of really helped them with just grow the legs overall and not really focus on the mind muscle connection, because more people had a harder time connecting with those leg muscles. And the leg muscles are one that I don't really have as many junior sport tuners either, because it's so one thing to really work on and kind of feel. And it took me really fucking a lot of time to be connecting my legs, all these ones. But there's a few little things I do itself to kind of really connect with them, so I can kind of share them. But another key thing I want to mention is, what muscle you feel burst is a muscle that's going to initiate the movement or be worked on the most. So for example, in a squat, if you kind of feel like your hamstrings or your hips kind of working more at first, which is very common, that's going to be the muscle that's going to get worked on the most, right? So if you're trying to focus on your quads over there on a squat, but you're feeling it in the hips more at first, that's probably the muscle that's being worked on, and that's why your quads are growing. Or for example, even like a lying leg curl, a hamstring curl, a lot of people feel in the lower back at first because you're using too heavy a weight or can't connect the muscle. So that's the muscle that's going to be worked on the most. And when I say the most, it might be like 70% on your lower back and 30% of your hamstrings, right? And that's why your hamstrings are not growing over there. But the same motion, even though wide leg curl, hamstring curl is supposed to work your hamstrings, you know, you can't connect with it itself and use other muscle groups to take over. So it's very important that the first muscle you do feel is the one that you can kind of initiate the movement with. So for squats, for example, I use what we call a tripod method. So maybe a stiff back squat or front squats or hack squats. I envision pretty much doesn't have all that foot over there, and I kind of push off with 3 points on the heel, the ball of my foot, the mallets on my foot. So 3 points of contact. When I think about that, my toes and my foot naturally kind of curls up. So when I'm coming down the squat, I'm focusing on keeping those 3 pressure points. And when I drive up, they're really driving up onto pushing through those 3 pressure points over there. And that's what personally helps me kind of really get a lot of output in my legs for squats, but also really feel my quads the most in this one. Because before, I remember whenever I did squats, I could never really feel my legs. It was always my hips itself, but I thought that's what squat really kind of felt like because I didn't know better. But once I really kind of started learning these things, connecting with it truly, I was like, oh shit, this is what it actually is supposed to feel like. And that's when my legs actually started to grow, which is pretty interesting. Now for leg extensions, I actually found it a lot of pressure on my knee for a lot of times when I first started out. And I personally found that when I point my toes just slightly inwards, I would say like 15 degrees, that's when I could really feel my quads a lot more. So that's what I personally kind of do, is like put my toes slightly inwards about 15 degrees. And I focus on kicking up. And then at the very top, I even kick my whole leg up itself, because a lot of times it's all like I'm thinking at the very top or contracting my legs as hard as I can, leg extension. But I literally think about lifting my full leg up and then I feel like bigger contraction over there. So that was something that really helped in my quad growth personally, because I'm like, wait a minute, this, you know, feels, it doesn't feel like I'm in the whole range of motion. And when I had a coach too as well, he was like, yeah, like your hips should be parallel with the legs. I'm like, how the hell do I do this, right? It was like, I'm right at the very top. So I really thought about kind of kicking my whole leg up, like get like another couple inches over. I really felt better traction. My legs started to grow more, which is pretty cool. But I was super confused at first because I'm like, I literally cannot go anymore, like higher, right? My legs will go. But I literally had to think about kicking my whole leg up. This was straight up. All right, so light leg curl slash hamstring curl. This is what it felt along the lower back for two as well. So this one is before I even start the motion itself, I feel that tension in my hamstrings. So like, you pretty much squeeze my, if it's a light leg curl, I squeeze my glutes. So right away, that's going to almost kick on my leg right against our little pad over there where my ankles are and have a little tension there. With a hamstring curl, I'm pretty much locked in having my thighs right against the pad over there and almost like start the motion where I feel a little bit of the hamstrings and like a little tension right there. Then that's when I start the motion. So I don't just kind of kick out of nowhere and kick down. Like I feel that tension first, then I start kicking down. And I keep it nice and slow and controlled too as well, because you'll know if you lose that hamstring tension, or watch, this is what I watched a lot of videos you guys send me, is if that pad rolls on my ankle, right? Because if you're just rolling your ankle, that means you're going too fast, right? So it's nice and slow. That pad on the ankle over there, whether it's light curl or hamstring curl, should always stay pretty much in place, maybe move like an inch or something like that, but should not move all the way up and all the way down across your whole ankle itself. So that is one big thing you have to look for. And that's why a lot of people kind of really have a hard time growing those ones. And my musculature legs is probably going to be the first one to actually that will get a good fun. All right, so that was it for...
Thank you guys for tuning into the Live to Inspire podcast, the number one podcast for men in the 20s, but he's late and get ass in the first bathroom. My coach has inspired others to the best dreams of fitness. So, if you guys would tune in to the episode and want to lose weight and get your abs shown for the very first time, give me word abs on Instagram and at CampbellBarSport. That is AMAPPINWSW_. And we'll have a chat whether or not I can help you out lose that weight to get your abs shown for the first time. That is the ending of today's episode of the Live to Inspire podcast. If you learned something today, then make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss out on an episode. Also, if you leave a written review on this podcast, that'd be greatly appreciated, because that pushes this podcast to more people just like you.